Well, I remember so well having you in our studio here just a few years back. You were here with the Punch Brothers, came by WUFT, and you performed at our Phillips Center for the Performing Arts. And you
I remember that. That was a fun show, actually. I remember the visit.
Do you? We certainly do. You made such an impact on a couple of young guys that were in there from the PK Young Bluegrass Band. They still are talking about it today. As a matter of fact, when I told them that, because they're going to your performance, when I told them I was going to be interviewing you, I've been getting text messages all day. You have to ask him this, and you have to ask him that. And so I said, okay, you send me your questions, and I'm going to ask those questions for you. And I thought they did a pretty good job. So I'm going to start with just a couple of things that are I have to ask, and I've watched some of the videos on the website about the MacArthur Fellow Program and was looking at the various people who won this year and the ones who won last year, and you were so charming when you were talking about the fact that you were wondering, did they get this right? Do they realize I play a mandolin? I got to step up my game. And so how's it been since you won this wonderful award?
You know, that's still, it's almost like it all happened in a dream, and occasionally people remind me that the dream was real. It serves to basically kind of stoke the fire that I've lit under myself. I live to work, and I love to work. I absolutely adore music and try daily to have a better, you know, a clearer understanding. You know, I want to end the day with a clearer understanding of, you know, what music is, what makes good music good, and you know, what I can do to be a part of making good music. And the MacArthur was, you know, that was just an absolutely thrilling and completely unexpected vote of confidence. But at the same time, it's an indictment. You know, you don't want to stand out for not standing out.
Right. It was just a call out of the blue, right?
Completely out of the blue. You have no idea that you've even been, you know, submitted for consideration. You can't apply for it or anything.
Yeah, and you're like, all right, right. Yeah, you're really calling and giving me this award. Sure. Who is this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I didn't even answer the call, of course, for a while. Who answers their phone when they don't know the number these days, you know? And they left some sort of cryptic voicemails, and eventually I got kind of scared and played one of the voicemails for a buddy who actually looked up the phone number and said it's from something called the MacArthur Foundation, and then I just went, you know, white as a sheet, because I knew about the program, but I just couldn't, and then I thought maybe my buddies were messing with me.
What's exciting is that it says on, when you read about it, it says, you know, there's no paperwork, nobody's following up saying, okay, what have you accomplished now this year? There's so much freedom that it really truly seems to cater to letting the genius be the genius, right?
Well, that's certainly the idea of the program. But you know, for me, again, it's definitely, it's just as much indictment as it is, you know, a reward. So I take the responsibility very, very seriously, and you know, I'm still completely honored and humbled that they chose me, you know, to be a fellow, and I am going to try my very hardest to deserve it, you know.
When you embarked, obviously I've heard a wide variety of the genres that you've performed in, you know, everything from traditional bluegrass to now, you know, with Punch Brothers, you've taken it to another level, and now you're on the solo tour playing Bach. You are really igniting something in this new generation of young people who are willing to step out of the box and try some new things. Maybe because you're on the road so much, you don't get a chance to get the full flavor of that, but these young musicians that I've seen around Gainesville are just on fire about watching you try all these things, and now they're wanting to try all these things. Does that matter to you? Do you want to do that with these young musicians?
Oh, God, if I could I mean, if I, that would be my dearest hope, that I would make some music that would, you know, that would switch a light on for someone, because that's what all of my favorite music does for me, is I, you know, I just feel like all of a sudden, you know, some area of what it means to be human is brighter than it was before, and I can actually see it. There's some detail that I can, you know, that I can start studying that wasn't there before. It almost feels like maybe a camera just switched on that gives me a whole new perspective on what it means to be alive. So if I could even, you know, if anything I ever do does that for anyone, I'm thrilled, just delighted. As far as trying lots of different things are concerned, I don't really consider them to be that different. I do think that sort of the discussion of, you know, various genres and stuff, it's necessary because we have to apply, you know, language to music, and that's always a little clumsy. The best way to communicate about music is to just play different things, you know, with people, for them, with them. So I look at genre as sort of more useful, like visually speaking, than orally speaking. If you say the word bluegrass, for instance, I think people can get a fairly clear picture in their head of it's, you know, mandolin, banjo, guitar, bass, fiddle, perhaps a dobro, something like that. But after that, you never know what people have actually heard. And so when you say the word bluegrass to one person, they could be like me and consider bluegrass to be sort of the music that's the label that Bill Monroe applied to his own music, you know, that he basically, it was original enough to deserve its own name, you know, but of course was a combination of a lot of things, a lot of his influences, things that he loved, and, you know, always the things that you don't love, you know, sort of inform what you do as much as the things that you do, you know, because you're making these conscious decisions to avoid those things. But, you know, so Monroe did that, and then Flatt & Scruggs and the Stanley Brothers, you know, sort of propagated it, and then guys like Sam Bush and David Grisman sort of messed around with it and, you know, like made their own thing out of it, and then guys like Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer, you know, have incorporated it into the music that they make. And, you know, so that's kind of what bluegrass means to me. But then you could say that same word, so all of those things rush into my head as far as what, you know, what you're talking about when you say the word bluegrass. But to maybe someone else, maybe the only context they have for it is like, you know, the old television program Hee Haw. And at that point, we're talking about something that's as different as, you know, classical music is from death metal. So I do think that you know, what happens when you talk about genre, there's like two genres of music, and those are, one, good music, two, bad music. And the instances of good music that we might consider to come from, you know, this and that and the other genre, the best instances of music sort of rise to the top of their respective genres and, you know, enter this other club, you know, the good music club. And, you know, I consider maybe J.S. Bach to be sort of the president of that club. But you want to try and make music that gains entry into that club. And I would say that the music, however aesthetically different it might be, that gains entry into the good music genre is far more similar than, you know, those various instances of good music are far more similar to each other than they are to other instances of music that fall into, like, a genre such as bluegrass. You know, that, like, there's some great bluegrass song is more like a great symphony movement than it is like a bad bluegrass song.
I saw you doing
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I saw you doing an interview online where you were commenting about how you just were watching a performance and were so wowed that you just, you know, let out a sound and people were shushing you. And so when you are performing Bach on your solo tour here in Gainesville, if people are inspired, you like that? You want people to be a part of that, from the audience to get into it and not sit there stoically? And
I want people to be able to be themselves. I would love for people to be in their comfort zone and to listen to, you know, the music that I've selected for that night, to listen to it however they like to listen to music, and not to try and, you know, affect the disposition of the music listener that they think it's intended for, or something like that. I would hate for someone to come to a show that has a bunch of Bach and just decide, like, well, you know, this is Bach. This is very serious music. I need to listen seriously. You know, I need to put my thinking cap on and you know, try and have a night of improving music here. You know, like, however you listen to music is how I'd love for you to be able to do that, because I love music, and I go to a Radiohead show and listen the same way as I go and listen to a Mahler symphony. You know, I've got a pair of ears, and I love listening to music, and I'm, you know, it all goes through that same set of ears, and I'd love to be able to present, you know, a program that, you know, knocks on your door and says, hey, you know, is it cool if I hang out here for a little while, you know, in your space? And I don't want to dictate someone's night, you know, how their musical experience goes. I'd love for, ideally, a performance experience is, you know, is half performer and half audience. That, you know, I feel like when things are going well, I'm not performing for people, I'm performing with them. And, you know, the fact that all of a sudden we're all experiencing Bach together, me included, you know, doesn't mean that there needs to be, you know, total silence.
Right. Do you think you are trying to, in any way, introduce the younger audience to classical music by doing this solo tour?
Oh, well, it's not, you know, certainly not a primary objective, but it would be a lovely, side effect. You know, I love it. And that's what, to me, performance is about sharing music that you love with whoever is interested enough to, you know, buy a ticket that night.
Well, you always show your emotions on your face. You have the most facial expressions when you perform, and your love for music just comes through. There's no doubt about it. These young people also want to know a couple quick questions. They'll kill me if I don't ask. They want to know, how do you take care of your fingers?
Oh, well, you know, warming up slow is the main thing. Warming up slow and being really honest with yourself about what you're feeling. I think some people, you know, it's so scary when you do feel any sort of physical pain, you know, on account of playing, you know, maybe very technically demanding music or whatever it may be. And I think sometimes denial is the easiest way to deal with that. And it's very, very, very important for serious musicians to feel whatever it is and to, you know, back off, try and rest. I try not to play, you know, really intensely technically demanding music for longer than 45, 50 minutes at a time when I'm in the practice room. And then on stage, you know, my program's about, I don't know, an hour and 40 minutes or so. But you know, you really want to keep breathing. You want to try and keep the not to get all mystical or anything, but you want to try and keep the sort of energy flowing, that all that focus that it takes to perform a difficult piece of music. You want to just make sure that you're shifting that focus from place to place and not always directing it into the same, you know, parts of your arms or your fingers. You also want to participate in this performance as an audience member. You know, sometimes put yourself out in the audience and, like, listen to yourself and take a load off, kick back, listen to the beautiful music that you're presenting. Just take a deep breath and realize that, you know, that you're sharing music. I feel that sometimes that's that can improve the physical outlook a lot. But you know, the main thing, I drink lots of water. I do a lot of self-massage. I get real massages. Sometimes I'll ice down after a show like a pitcher. You know, you do ice bags and then hot water. You got to treat yourself like an athlete a little bit.
How many mandolins do you have, Chris?
A lot, but there's only really the one that I'm playing it all right now. And I have a new one that I just got, a new old one. That I love, and I think it has a lot of potential, but I haven't had the time to, like, break it in yet.
So you're primarily playing which one? Is it the Gibson, or?
It's a Gibson F5 from 1924, and it's just a tremendous mandolin. I'm very lucky to have it.
So you must carry that on your lap with you at all times when you're traveling from show to show. I'm sure it has such sentimental value, too.
It rarely leaves my side.
Well, we look forward to having you in Gainesville and take good care.
I'm delighted to come down there. I just don't get to come to Florida very often. In my career, I haven't played in Florida very much. For whatever reason, I guess, you know, it's hard to sort of, like, you know, route it in your tour. So I'm really excited to get down there. It's always exciting when you go somewhere that kind of feels like uncharted territory when you've been doing it this long. So I'm going to be really fired up to play. I look forward to seeing y'all.
All right. Well, same here. We look forward to it. Thank you so much for
the time. Well, we'll all hang out in a few days. Can't wait.
Okay. Take care, Chris.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye.